I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace, where changemakers work, create, and lead. Today we are fortunate to have with us Reverend F. Lydell Brown, the pastor of Burning Bush Family Life Center, which is celebrating their 10th anniversary this year. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. Why don't you start out by telling us, where were you born and what was your childhood like?
Sure. I was born in the city of Danbury, which is about 60 miles from Hartford. It was a really small town. It's not small anymore. Some would consider it a city today. But as a young boy growing up in Danbury, very rural, thoughts and memories of the Danbury Fair, you know, just very family, just a wholesome town. I am the oldest of four. I have a younger brother and two younger sisters. My dad was a pastor, so I'm a PK. My mother was very involved in the church, but also involved in social affairs in the city of Danbury. She was the secretary of the NAACP in Danbury for almost 20 years. And so, you know, I've seen a lot because of her and because of my dad. So I've seen a lot of the church and also seen the things of the late 60s and early 70s from the eye of racial stuff.
So how did your childhood formation influence who you are as a leader today?
Well, I come, since my mother and father were old school, the oldest always led in everything. If my brothers and sisters were with me and one of them got hurt, I got in trouble because I should know better. They were always pushing me, so I look back on things, they were hardest on me because I was the oldest. And you know what they say, that you practice on the oldest one so that you don't make the same mistakes on the younger ones, and so that's how it was with me. It always pushed me to do the best, because being that my father was a pastor, my mother was a professional, always trying to stand up to the things that they put before me.
So how did your childhood years influence your faith formation?
Well, for as long as I can remember, when I opened my eyes, my dad was a minister in the AME Zion Church. And so I was born there. I was, that's where I grew up in the church. I sung in the choir. I was a Buds of Promise, sung in the Joyful Sounds, was in Christian education, was with the youth. And so everything was AME Zion. And so church has always been a big part of my early years. What happened to me was that I fell in love with this thing called sports. And if anyone knows about sports, when it comes to, at that time, junior high, not middle school, you go to practice on Sundays. And that was always a contentious time, because my dad wanted his children in church and I wanted to play ball. And in order to play ball, you needed to be in practice on Sundays, and usually Sunday mornings.
And so how did you come to a place where you knew about God for yourself?
Well, and that's really interesting that you ask about that. I had someone in my later 20s ask me the question, when did I really acknowledge that I had a relationship with God? And I was 26. I heard preaching every day. in the house, okay, in church and Bible study and prayer meeting. When I was coming up, it was nothing for us to be in church 3 or 4 times a week. Sunday was all day church. We had service in the morning, and my mother, sometimes she would make lunch for us. We'd be out in the car or maybe sit on a blanket and eat and then wait for the 3 or 4 o'clock service in the afternoon. But what the young lady asked me, she asked me as a PK, when did I receive Christ? Because most PKs don't receive him early. Because church is what we do. It's not, you know, you're to the place whereas that's all you see all the time. And so, and some of us feel as though that we're going to make it into heaven on the coattails of our parents, because that's what we've always been done. It wasn't, we didn't get saved to flee the wrath. We didn't get saved because our lives were out of order. Well, we just went to church because it was what you did.
And so talk about your call to ministry. How were you called in?
Well, because I saw everything my dad went through, ministry was the furthest thing from my mind. Didn't want no parts of it. As a matter of fact, I went to church just to keep my mom and dad kind of off me. All right? My mom died. She died of cervical cancer 32 years ago. And my mother and father, they were deep in the well. They had a deep relationship with God. We used to go through problems, and they would go in the bedroom and pray. You know, it was nothing. We prayed before we ate. The table was sacred. You didn't pray at the table. Just, you know, we lived in a Christian home. But when my mother died, that pain was something that sometimes I couldn't put it into words. There were times when I used to ask myself, how can I go on? And so I turned to something that I saw my mother and father turn to for comfort. And that was, I turned to God, because the pain, I just couldn't take the pain. And when I turned to him, it was strange. It was like he turned to me too. And I was feeling better just about myself, better about life, going to church, trying to get deeper in the word. And all of a sudden, I just started feeling though I needed to do more. The other thing is, too, because of sports, me and my dad, we had got kind of estranged where we weren't really talking or didn't really have a good relationship. But I found out that through me accepting Christ and getting closer, me and my dad really got close. I mean, really got close. And I used to have these, I hope you don't think that it's too crazy, but I used to have these dreams all the time of me inside this large room with all of these shadows of faces. I never could see the faces, but I would be behind the pulpit and I would be speaking. And I would wake up, and sometimes I would wake up almost yelling. You know what I mean? So something was going on. What was going on at the time? And one day, I told my dad, I said, I think God's tugging on me to do something that I never thought I would do. And he said, what is that? And I told him. And he just sat there and looked at me. And then he took me to our presiding elder, who I confessed my calling. And at that time in the Amy Zion Church, would then come talk to your presiding elder. They would put together a date for you to do your trial sermon. And that's what happened. Put a date together for me to do my trial sermon.
So talk about the day of your trial sermon.
Well, the day of my trial sermon, one thing that I didn't say was I told my dad about my calling, and three weeks later, he died of a massive heart attack. So the day of my trial sermon, I was so sad. I was sad because I had finally got something that me and my dad could be connected to, and he wasn't there. And so a lot of me was saying, what a cruel trick. You know, God just called me so that and then to take my dad. But I went ahead. So I looked out into the congregation. There was my brother, my two sisters, my aunts, my uncles, and there was this little lady that I called Grandma. She was the matriarch of our family. You talk about full of the Holy Spirit and just the epitome of the church. I took my text, my subject, I still remember it, was preventive maintenance, okay? And I just spoke what was on the paper, went from the paper, celebrated, talked about my life, sat down, and her name was Reverend Dorothy Kennedy at the time. She says, we would like for someone to give words. And my grandmother stood up and she said these words. She says, Lydell, if you never preach again, you preach today. And that's all I needed. His grandma said, I preached. So, you know.
And that was enough.
That was enough. That was enough.
So how do you nurture your own soul?
Oh, I'm one of those creatures cut from that cloth of self-sacrificing. I feel as though that you're only doing ministry when you give of yourself. And so for the longest, I don't really think I was taking care of myself. I was doing a lot of studying, I've always had a great prayer life. I pride myself in being faithful and having faith. But I don't think till the last 10, 15 years is when I really started to do some things for me so that I could have not just the discipline, but also have some peace, you know, because when you sacrifice a lot, that's exactly what you do. You sacrifice yourself, you sacrifice your family, you sacrifice your happiness. And so the things that I do today, that I just need some quiet time. I need some reflective time. I'm a very, very reflective person. I get inspired by people, you know, at 56 years of age. There's nothing wrong with every once in a while being so inspired that your eyes kind of tear up because you see something and you see God moving in somebody's life. And, you know, those are the things that keep me going.
We're talking with Reverend F. Lydell Brown, pastor of Burning Bush Family Life Center, and we'll be back after the break.
Make the world go round. just don't let the spin get you down. Things are moving fast. Hold on tight and you will last. Keep yourself
cause I'm meaning.
come back, we're talking with Reverend F. Lydell Brown, the pastor of Burning Bush Family Life Center in Waterbury, Connecticut. So in our first segment, we were talking a bit about your background. Tell us about your first ministry appointment.
Wow. So my first ministry appointment, I was asked by, at that time, our presiding elder to be at this small church in New Britain. And the church was called Resurrection Amy Zion Church. He told me to be there and said, told me the time to be there. And I said, okay, because at that time, one of my friends was pastoring that church. So I showed up that Saturday, and he, lo and behold, he told me the pastor of that church at that time was going to be moving down south for another appointment. And for the next 7 months, he wanted me to be the interim pastor there and bring the church into the annual conference. And so that's what I did. And I was shocked at what I remembered through my dad. I was also very shocked as to how easily I fit into this thing called pastoral ministry. I didn't realize that that's really who I was. I wanted to go forward in doing the things of God, but I didn't know that pastoral ministry is exactly who I've been called, who I was called to be.
And so unpack a little bit that first appointment. What mm-hmm. were the challenges?
Well, the first challenge was is that I had a bunch of young people. We were using the chapel inside of the YMCA in New Britain. And there was about 15 people. I've always been a rallier and an encourager. And so I was bringing encouraging messages. Most of the members were coming from Martin Luther King Boulevard, the projects that was around the corner. And I was just giving them a word every Sunday. And I noticed they kept bringing people with them. Young kids were bringing people with them. They were bringing their parents with them. And I was like, wow, look at this. And then the third Sunday I was there, I remember a couple came up and they asked me to lead them to Christ. Oh, you couldn't tell me anything then, because I was like, okay, now I see this is what it's all about. Because my dad used to always have a saying that if I've touched one life, then my living has not been in vain. And so the ministry had touched a life that tangibly that I could see had touched a life. And someone actually came, was led to Christ, and then joined the church. And so for those 7 months, I mean, my formation was it was outstanding, simply because we actually brought in 40 people.
Wow.
We ended up moving out of the chapel and having to move into the cafeteria. I had one gentleman who donated a van, because what I did, since it was the YMCA, they actually had a basketball team. I was actually able to get the girls to put a basketball team together. And at the time, I was a single parent and I had two daughters. My oldest daughter played on the basketball team with them. But what they told me, that it was just a breath of fresh air to see someone who really cared about the children. My day on Sunday, and I only had one service, I didn't get home till 4:30, 5 o'clock, because what happened is that people started asking for rides. And so I would actually drive the van. I would pick them up before church, bring them to the church, and then after church, bring them back home. And sometimes it would be 2 and 3 loads.
And then you received an appointment at McCall Church. Talk about your experience there.
Ooh. So McCall Church is the church that my father pastored. My father pastored that church for 13 years. I grew up in that church. And in Amy Zion Church, on a Sunday morning, we call it appointments. And so after the word was preached by the bishop, we all come back and we're sitting there, and I got all these plans, because things went so well at Resurrection. I got plans for the new conference year, and they said Resurrection Church, and they said somebody else's name. And I was like, wow, I guess I didn't do as good as I thought I did. I left money in the bank. The church had grew. So I'm sitting there, and so then they said the words, McCall Amy Zion Church, the Reverend, no, at that time I was still a brother. They said, Brother Lydell Brown. And so my mother in the ministry, she pinched me. She says, go get your appointment, because I was in shock. And I went to up there, received the appointment, and just sat there. And there was a part of me that did not want to go. because I knew McCall. They knew me. And I just didn't want to go at the time. So that's where I was. That's following Sunday, I went to church and I put on my brave pastoral face and went in there. And the oldest member of the church came up to me, gave me a hug and said, we needed a pastor and they sent us a boy. I was like, ah. So, you know, I put on my pastoral look again. I says, well, I'm him. But I went in my office and sat at my desk, shoulders sucking down, just like, I don't know if I can do this. So it was a challenging time.
And how long did you stay there?
15 years.
And so what caused you to make the move to walk out of McCall and start your own church?
Well, I was able to be in a lot of things, and I saw a lot of things in the Aim Design Church. I absolutely love Aim Design Church. I cut my teeth. They taught me discipline. They have a method and way of doing things. I built so many relationships, but God was calling me to do something different. He was calling me to take some of the lawful things away and do something different. And so that's what I did. And at first he started tugging on my heart to do something my 11th year there. So I was actually writing stuff down and putting it to the side. And it was in the 15th year where I just started hearing him more, it's time to start the church. And so I just started putting some fillers out there. At the time, also, I was a community organizer doing some things like that. And a pastor down the hill at the First Lutheran Church heard I was looking for space and gave me a call. I answered and I went down and spoke to her. Her name was Diane Rainton. And she asked me, what did I want to do? What was on my heart? And so I told her. And she looked at me with tears in her eyes. And she said, well, what's the name of the church? What's going to be the name of your church? It's going to be called Burning Bush Family Life Center. And she says, why did you come up with the name Burning Bush? I said, I didn't. It was given to me. I said, then what God was telling me is that the same way he told Moses, take off thy shoes, for where you stand is holy ground. It's not so much the structure. Take off your shoes to me means come and relax. Come and be comforted. Come know that there's not going to be any judgment. This is a non-judgment zone. And so that's what I wanted to do. And so I came. She asked me to come back that afternoon to give that very same spiel to her leadership. And I did that. And I stepped out of the room. When I came back, they said, well, here's what we can do for you. We can give you use of our sanctuary. We can give you office space. And we can also give you room over in the gym to do things that you need to do. And we don't want anything from you.
Wow.
They said, we like your vision. And so I went home, and now I'm actually tormented with the fact that, okay, God, you've opened everything up. Annual conference is in 2 weeks. So I was scared to death not to move simply because God had moved so quickly. And so I just said, okay, God. And I let the elder know that time I was leaving. Went to the annual conference, got before the whole annual conference and asked them very respectfully that I wanted to step down from the Aim Design Church, that God was calling me to do that. The question was then asked to me, but you said that when you came into the ministry that you were called into the ministry, into the Aim Design Church, and immediately God gave me the words. At the time, because I was in the Aim Design Church and got called into ministry, it just made sense to start ministry in the Aim Design Church. But we serve a God that moves forward, and we also serve a God that reveals different parts of your life as you go along. And he had revealed to me that he want me in the Aim Design Church because it's the best structure around to me. But there's just some things he wanted me to do different.
So tell us about your ministry today, and who are the people you specialize in serving?
Ooh, okay. It's young people. I would say it's people 15 to 35. The average age of our church is 28. We have about 80 members. The oldest person in my church is 68. Her name is Beulah Johnson, she has been with me almost 25 years. And then I have some others who have been with me for some 20 years. And so when I think about people willing to be in this ministry for those amount of years, that means a whole lot to me. But Burning Bush Family Life Center, we are a really charismatic church, Bible-believing church, fellowshipping church, family-oriented church. That's why it's called Family Worship Center. We want people to know that you can bring your whole family there, and that we're going to have things for the family. So we have marriage counseling. We have events for youth, programs for youth. We have great music ministry. I guess I can preach. I guess the word comes every Sunday. Okay. We are a multicultural church, so we have Latino, we have European, we have some Islanders, and so it's working well. It's working well.
And when you think about your ministry today, how did your past experiences prepare you for this ministry?
Oh, well, when I was at McCall, we had a gentleman who was actually here on a visa, and he was going to school. And he came to the church one day, and he's like, "Hey, Pastor Brown, can I speak to you?" I said, "Sure." He said, "They're getting ready to pull my visa. The time is up, and I'm not finished with school." And I remember really feeling so bad for him, but really not having any resources to help him. And so because of him, I made sure that I would always have relationships with this person and that person and that person. And so it's not about who you know, but it's about, not about what you know, but who you know. And so what has happened is that at Burning Bush Family Life Center, those persons who might not have means to get through this door or get through that door, I can open some doors for them. We have a great mixture. We have some professionals. We have brothers and sisters who are from around the way. We have those who are, we have a lot of first generation Christians. So sometimes that gets to be difficult because, I got a lot of young people, and I have young people who are not churched, as they say. And so they're coming in for the first time, and so I get all of those growing pains.
We're talking with Reverend F. Lydell Brown, the pastor of Burning Bush Family Life Center, who are celebrating their 10th anniversary this year, and we'll be back after the break. Have been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches.
There's a praise that lives deep in my heart, and it says, "Oh Lord, I love you, I am blessed. When I think of your goodness to me, it comforts me daily. But there are times in my life when things don't work out right, and my burdens are heavy, and there's no joy in sight. Put my eyes back on you, for you've always come through. And with this simple refrain, I will bless you, bless you, 'cause
Lord, you've been good to me. Whoa. Make the way I could not see.
Your love came in, lifted me.
And I won't
come through the
year.
By my tears,
there is not a closer friend than you.
Oh Lord, you have been so good to me. More than this world could ever be.
I really wanna thank
you.
Yeah.
Lift my hands, give you praise in the midst of each storm.
'Cause you are worthy.
When life's sorrows and heartache, I will remember.
You are still worthy.
Let the words of my mouth no room for doubt, because down through the years you've been faithful. And when I think it all through, oh Lord, it's been you who's been there all the time, and I'm grateful, grateful.
Lord, you've been good to me,
yeah.
Ain't no way I could not see lifting me.
Welcome back. We're talking with Reverend F. Lydell Brown, the pastor of Burning Bush Family Life Center in Waterbury, Connecticut, and they're celebrating their 10th anniversary in ministry. So, Reverend Brown, what has your spiritual attention at this time?
My spiritual attention at this time is people's lives. We're living in a time now where the lie is the truth, and the truth is a lie. We're living in a time now that even what you see, people say you're really not seeing it. And so people's morale is really down. I know in this country they're trying to say that we're doing well financially, but it has not trickled down to these areas that I pastor in. And so, you know, you see stuff on CNN and all this other stuff, and people are wondering that, so if we're doing so much better, how come I'm still not making ends meet? Especially this year, we had a lot of people who depended on the income tax, and the income tax has been like cut in half. And they're like, when did this happen? And so people are just in a shock. We knew that, yeah, during the year, you probably was getting more money to take home, but you just wouldn't put two and two together. And so, you know, those are the people that I pastor. Then a lot of people in our church have gotten degrees, and that's a blessing, but they have student loans that are, I mean, tremendous. And so they have these bills and stuff that are like an albatross around their neck. And so I'm trying to keep people inspired, trying to keep people encouraged so that people don't quit, because we're living in a time now where people are leaving the church, you know, and doing something else. Everybody's searching for something that's going to make them feel better. So that really has my attention. And then my attention also is on myself. I'm 56. I've had some health issues. You know, I've not allowed it to stop me, but I'm not so afraid, but I'm concerned. So I have to position myself to make sure that I take care of myself, make sure that I can be there for my lovely wife and got the grandson. You know, I'm trying to make sure that I can have some joy. I'm not one of those that wants to just do ministry all my life and one day you find me passed out in the corner and then at my funeral they said, you know, he just gave it all. I want to get a little bit too. You know what I mean? I want some joy.
So how is God preparing you for the next phase of your ministry?
Well, as I said, health issues. So I had total knee replacement 3 years ago. And I've always been a big, strong guy. I mean, I used to be a power lifter. I'd be in the weight room benching 400 to 500 pounds. It's always been me. I've always been able to depend on my strength to do everything. I preach hard. I love hard. I work hard. I play hard. That's always been me. Someone called me a bull in the china closet. And so I'm not able to do those things as hard now. So I'm having to use that which God has placed in my head, which is my intellect, also the anointing that He's given me, to come up with innovative things, not to kill myself, but to also keep this ministry alive. And so I'm doing things now more thoughtful. It's made me more gentler, it made me more tender. So it has actually made me a better pastor, to tell you the truth, because now the compassion and the empathy that I have for folk is not something that I just talk about, but it's who I am.
And what is your vision of your ministry for the future?
Well, it really is just I just want it to enlarge itself. I think right now we're doing great stuff. We're part of this Imani project where we're actually educating the community on opiate addiction. We've been involved big time with the expungement of felonies, because there's a lot of brothers and sisters out there who have done their time, want a second chance, but don't know how to go about it. And so we have at least three workshops a year where we help people get the felonies expunged. It's not an easy process. It's actually put together in a way where the average Joe or average Sue would quit before they actually get to the promised land. So we have people now who would actually walk with persons who are looking to get their felonies expunged. And we, as of right now, we have 8 people who have actually done it. Some have gotten it done in as little as a year, and some it has taken them 2 or 3 years. But again, using the words from my dad, if we touch one life, then our living hasn't been in vain.
As you reflect on your ministry as a whole and what has inspired you along the way, who are your ministry mentors and what impact have they had on you?
Wow. Well, my very first one is the Reverend Dorothy Kennedy. There's a reason why I feel about her the way I do. When I was living here in the city of Hartford, she used to come and pick me up every Sunday for church. And I used to be out on the corner with my Bible, waiting for her. And there are times I have to remember that. that I wanted this thing so bad that I was willing to stand out down the corner. And then on top of that, she drove all the way from New Britain to pick me up, to bring me to Waterbury to church, and didn't bring me back home. She's been in ministry over 50 years. She loved me. Now, she's a tough one. but she loves me, and she has very, very peculiar gifts. Another one is a Reverend Ann Benford. And that's the thing I'm looking at. I've had some great mentors who have been females. So it's got me to, it not gotten me, but I'm in the place now where, you know, God is no respecter of person. You know, there are so many people who think that, you know, only men can be mentors. I've had some great mentors. You've been a mentor.
Well, thank you.
you know, and then I've had mentors who have been great, such as the Reverend W.H.E. Ruffin, who has retired and since moved to Virginia. But I've had great mentors. And now, since I'm 56, I've been in this thing now a long time, I'm seeing that I'm a mentor to folks. But every once in a while, I have to reach back and call some of those who have been in it longer than I have. My dad used to always say, you never catch up, and that is so true. And so every once in a while, I'll reach back and just ask questions. I bounce things off of you. I'll bounce things off this person. And my lifeblood is building relationships. And so I have higher tiers and some middle tier relationships. But we can always talk about the goodness of the Lord, and we can always talk about ministry. This thing does not get easier. If your ministry is going to be relevant, then you're going to take some hits. You're going to take some hits, and hopefully you have some people to talk to. We have our Monday mornings where, you know, after we get up and lick our wounds, we kind of call each other and just say, so how did it go for you yesterday? What are you seeing? And a lot of times we find out that God is doing some of the very same things, you know, so that's confirmation that we know that God is moving inside of our churches.
When all is said and done, what difference would you like to say you've made in the world?
When all is said and done. Well, the very first thing is I want to make sure that my daughters can tell anyone. I have three daughters, Quenisha, Chelsea and Shaw, that they can tell anyone that my dad really loved God and that my dad really loved us, that he really poured into us. I want to make sure that my grandson knows how much I love him, that my wife can say that he wasn't just the minister in the church, that when the door closed at our home, he loved me like nobody else, but I saw his love for God. I want to leave a legacy, whereas I've touched some people whose lives have changed, who've gone from point A to point B. I would love to be able to sit down one of these days and really write a book, you know, and actually God has given me the title of, you know, Saved, Where Do I Go From Here, which goes along with one of the social media names I have, Pastor's Lab. We're supposed to be building disciples. So after you get saved, where do you go from here? Where you go from here, you start learning what Jesus did to set this world on his ear and do some things differently. So that's what I want to do. I want to be able to do some things differently. I don't want to be so lawful and dogmatic. People are trying, and I think everybody wants to do better. You just got to have the right vehicle for folks to be able to do better.
If someone wants to find out more about your ministry, how do they find out more?
Well, you can go on our website, which is bbflc.org. It stands for Burning Bush Family Life Center. You can call the phone number, which is 203-819-3006. We're located in the city of Waterbury, 117 Sharon Road. For those who know the Waterbury area, we always say next to Mr. Wop's restaurant. Our services are 9 a.m. on Sunday mornings, and even that's different. I like being different. To be able, you give me 90 minutes, and I think that God can do some things in your life in 90 minutes, and then you have the rest of your day. You have the rest of your day. Again, we're coming up on June the 9th for our 10th anniversary, which is going to be at 4 p.m. The preacher is going to be Reverend Dr. Michael Bailey, co-pastor of First Cathedral. And so we're looking on that day to have just a really great, great time. If not doing anything, come on down.
Reverend F. Lydell Brown, we thank you for your witness and your ministry. Thanks for being here.
Been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace. Reach out to us and tell us what you think. Look for Rich Answers, the Conference of Churches, and me, Reverend Dr. Shelley Bess, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like us, follow us, share us.
MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.